name's John Cowan, and each week on the show, Real Life, I get to talk to someone interesting. And tonight, my guest is Andrew Thorburn, who's the CEO of the BNZ Bank. Welcome, Andrew.
Hi there, John. Good to be here.
Now, is the BNZ the biggest bank in New Zealand?
No, it's not. That's actually ANZ National, but all the banks are pretty much bunched up together.
Right, so you're all front row sort of scrubbing down. And
that's right.
Yes.
Yeah.
And how much money do you think you sit on? I remember seeing comics of Scrooge McDuck doing swimming in this huge swimming pool full of money, you know, ducking and diving through. You don't have a big bank like
that. No, we don't. In the olden days, we used to actually have a lot more cash, and you could go into the safe and actually see the actual cash. But nowadays, I think BNZ probably has about $50 to $60 billion of deposits that we hold on behalf of customers.
$50 billion.
Yep.
Yep. And so explain banking to me. You pay someone else to take their money off them. You give them some money and say, we'll take your money, and then you give it to another person who wants money and charge them a little bit more, and you make your money from the difference. Is that...
That's basically how the sort of the economics of it work. But I think a lot of people say, you know, banking is all about sort of economics and analysis, and part of it is I trained as an economist, and that's actually what drew me into banking. But actually, I think I've worked in banking all my career, and I think it has a much higher purpose to actually do what's good for New Zealand, to create businesses that are successful, that can export their goods and services, to create jobs.
Okay, so it's more than just the Mr. Mannering of Dad's Army, who's, you know, who tightly holds on to his money and begrudgingly lets it out to someone who can prove that they don't really need the money in the first place.
One of the things that banks have to be careful, and you can see banks around the world that have collapsed and caused huge pressure on governments and taxpayers, is that you do have to be careful and disciplined about who you lend money to, right? Because if you start to not get all of that back, you start to cause a real stress on the bank, and ultimately you wipe out the shareholders, and then you actually collapse. So you do have to be disciplined when you lend money, who you lend it to, for what term, and on what terms.
Right. So that's a big part, I guess, of conservative banking.
That's a very big part of the basics of banking. You know, I grew up, I worked at ASB for 10 years. That was my sort of first main role. And you learn the basics of banking around customer service, managing the risks that the bank has got, and making sure it expands carefully. But one of the key things that you learnt, and I think we still need to know today, is that you must be disciplined around who you lend to, businesses and individual customers alike.
All right. And so banking, it excites you?
Yeah, I'm very passionate about banking because there's a range of different things that you have to deal with. And certainly as a CEO of a bank, you deal with clients, you deal with staff, you deal with technology systems, you deal with a brand, you deal with lots of people issues, you know, who you hire, how you develop them, management that you bring through, leadership programs.
Yep.
You deal with the reputation of the bank.
Right. And how many people do you actually have working in the BNZ?
About 5,000.
5,000?
Yep, 5,000 people.
Okay. And you've still got some responsibilities of the National Bank of Australia that you came from, didn't you?
Yeah, so my main role is to be the CEO of the Bank of New Zealand, and that's really my full-time job. But I also sit on the group executive of the National Australia Bank, and I chair one of the National Australia Bank subsidiaries in the US, Great Western Bank. Yeah,
over in Dakota.
Yeah, it's headquartered in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and operates in about 6 or 7 states in the Midwest. So that's an interesting place to go.
Well, I was reading through your list of things that you did, and it all seemed like I'd expect a person involved in Australian New Zealand banking to do, but then you're chairman of a bank in the middle of the USA. So do you have to flit over there quite often?
Yes, I'm the chair of the board. So the board's role is obviously governance, to make sure that the executive have a clear plan and a clear strategy, and it is to oversee that. So you're not running it.
Right.
So there is a CEO of the bank there, an American, and he knows that market. He grew up in that market. So I deal with him maybe once a month, but twice or three times a year I go across there, and I attend board meetings in person, because I think, you can read the papers, you can read the news, but until you actually sort of eyeball some of the people and get to know them, you build trust in their competence, and you have more confidence in them.
Right. I get the impression that America must be a scary place to do banking, just because, you know, there's been so many collapses and calamities, and when you go there, there's a sort of an air of sort of a nation almost staggering along drunk on debt. And I'm just wondering, you know, should we be worried about our big brothers up there?
Well, the American economy has been a sort of force, a powerful force of growth for the last probably 100 years. Hmm. And I think there is a strong capitalist bent, an entrepreneurial bent, and big, lots of capital that can go to new ideas. So I believe, I'm one of those people in the camp that believe that ultimately the US have the capability and the skills and the education system to trade their way out.
Yep.
The big issue is they've got so much debt throughout the whole country that is going to be a drag on growth. And they don't have, I don't think in a political sense now, a clear unified view about sort of America's view on what they play, the role they play in the world, and where their economy should go. So you can see now Obama and Romney, who's likely to get the Republican nomination, so polarised in terms of their support and what their views are about how the US economy should grow.
I mean, that's an incredible feature of American life, isn't that polarisation? Yes. You know, there are 90 degrees, 180 degrees to each other on so many issues. I mean, New Zealand has got just different flavours of vanilla, usually politically, we make the most of the differences that we can find. But over there, it really is very different on all sorts of social areas, but it's different financially too, you reckon?
Yes, it is. Yeah. And I agree with you about the political situation, because whenever I go to the US, Midwest or New York or San Francisco, a lot of people have very strong views about politics.
Hmm.
And you sit down to dinner, if you're out at a dinner, they'll talk about it. That'll be the first topic. Whereas here, it'll be topic number five. You know, when we've exhausted the first four, we'll eventually get to politics.
Right. It's amazing, though, that you'd actually sit there, if you're a Democrat, whether you'd sit down for a meal with a Republican.
Yeah, well,
they polarise so much, they sit
across the table.
Yes. Yeah. For a while. Now, BNZ, it's Aussie-owned, and one of the things that I look at some figures, like, was it $1.7 billion that the Aussie banks made in 6 months? That's about, what, $3.5 billion in a year? That's about $850 per Kiwi, counting even babies and children. That's a lot of money we're paying for someone to swap money from people that have it to people that don't, isn't it?
Well, I think going back to the earlier conversation, John, I think banks manage a lot of risks. You can see that BNZ, just to use BNZ as an example, has a $70 billion lending book. Now, it is important that we're very disciplined and careful about who that's linked to, all right? Because if we start to lose too much of that through reckless lending and bad lending, then you start to really put the whole bank and the banking system under pressure. My view is that if you look around the world, and in fact this has been played back to me, that Australia, Canada and New Zealand are three of the strongest banking systems in the world, and I think that's basically true. So we've got strong banks, well regulated, well governed, and the shareholders of the major banks, yes, they're Australian, but all of the New Zealand banks, take BNZ, opened in 1861. We employ 5,000 people in New Zealand. And most of the fundamentally important decisions about BNZ and where we expand and what we do are made in New Zealand by a New Zealand executive team and by a New Zealand board. So it's important to get that perspective. But also, most of the revenue we make from loans, most of that we pay to depositors to compensate them for giving us their money.
The profit I mentioned, though, is after you've paid your staff, and it's after you've paid your...
But let's just come to... before you get to the profit number.
Yeah.
Before we get to a profit number, we pay it to depositors.
Yeah.
We also pay, in BNZ's case, about $300 million a year tax.
Yeah.
We pay another $300 million to suppliers through New Zealand who provide services to the bank.
Yeah.
And we provide another $300 to $400 million to staff. Hmm. Salaries and wages. So all I'm saying is that, yes, when you look at the bank's profit, it looks like a big number, but when you take a $70 billion balance sheet for BNZ alone, you take that we employ 5,000 people and we pay tax to the government and we pay lots to suppliers through New Zealand, I think you need to see the number in context. And when we have a profit, about a third of that is retained by the bank to invest in new initiatives. and we use it to build, bolster our capital.
Yeah.
And then the rest of it's paid to shareholders. But you would expect that shareholders should be paid a dividend for the money that they've invested in a bank.
Compared with the bank in Australia, the other National Australia banks, is there isn't there a smaller difference between the money, the rates that you charge and the rates that you pay out over there? Do we not have a bigger margin here?
Well, the margins here would be slightly higher, but not significantly so, than the Australian banking system.
And you're making more profit here per transaction, though.
If you look at, say, the return on assets, try to sort of do an apples with apples, it will be somewhat higher in New Zealand, but not significantly so.
Right.
Not significantly so.
Okay. I suppose I just had to check off that thing. You know, are you really Rorticus?
It's a common question.
Are you really Rorticus? But, okay.
My view is too, thank goodness we've got strong banks. And thank goodness we've got strong Australian shareholders, because actually we've been able to borrow overseas in the last few years amongst the global financial crisis and a recession and get money at reasonably good rates. Now, without being Australian owned, that money would have been a lot harder to get and a lot more expensive.
Okay, so they look at with some relief at a stable market down here and say...
Absolutely. Yeah. So one of the issues with New Zealand is that we don't save enough.
Mm.
We've heard that many times, and so as a result, we have to borrow money overseas. The banks do that, often in Europe. And when you go to Europe, I think it's a real positive that we have a strong banking system and a strong Australian shareholder.
Now, when I was a kid at primary school, I won a essay competition from the Post Office Savings Bank on thrift.
Yes.
I had to write an essay on thrift and won, I think, 5 shillings or something like that, some huge amount. And banks would encourage thrift, but I sometimes wonder if banks more encourage being spendthrifts, you know, to spend up. Which is best for banks, people that are being thrifty or people being spendthrifts?
Well, you certainly need people to save, because as they save, that builds the bank's deposit base.
Mm.
And without deposits, we can't lend to businesses to help them invest and grow and export.
But if people aren't spending money, those businesses won't grow.
Well, that's right. So, you know, the economy is obviously a very interesting dynamic process that you need people to spend, you need businesses to invest, you need banks to lend, you need people to save all at the same time to make sure that that cycle continues to flourish.
I remember being in Timaru 25 years ago, and they had a real air of depression around the place, and people were tightening their belts. And I remember someone saying, the banks are full of money, it's just that everybody's too scared to spend.
Yeah.
Do you think we're heading that way at the moment with...
Well, I think it's absolutely correct given the environment of the world. I mean, we're seeing right now Greece go to... elections, which will probably determine whether they stay in the euro or not, and have huge implications, not just for Greece, but for the world.
Yep.
And you can see a global financial crisis where banks have been bailed out and companies have gone broke and recessions.
Yep.
So you can see now there's an air of uncertainty.
Mm.
There's an air of conservatism amongst companies and banks. And I think that's understandable given the environment that we're in and that we're likely to be in for the next few years. So you see, I think a lot of businesses in New Zealand, mid-sized to larger businesses, are quite strong.
Mm.
You know, if they got through the last few years...
They're going to get through.
They're going to get through, but they're being disciplined. They're being spendthrifts, in your word. They're putting their money in the bank and they're not expanding at the moment and making acquisitions or investing in new plant because they just don't know what the future holds in the next 1 to 2 years.
Mm. Okay, so for a person like myself, is the best thing to, I suppose the best thing for me is to save my money and hope everyone else goes out and spends it to keep the economy going, but I sit on my money. Yeah.
Well, it depends on what your situation is. I mean, we do need people to save, but also if you're a business person, we also need you at some point to have the confidence to start investing so that you can grow your business, because as you grow, jobs get created, wealth gets created, and the economy starts to move forward.
If you've just tuned in, my guest tonight is Andrew Thorburn, CEO of the BNZ Bank, and if you'd like to talk to him, perhaps you'd like to put a question to him, perhaps you might like to ask his advice or his perspective on things, or perhaps some feedback that you might like to give straight to the top, to the CEO. Andrew Thorburn's with me till 9 o'clock tonight, and you can call on 0800 80 10 80. If you want to get an idea of what he looks like, you can go to the News Talk ZB website, www.newstalkzb.co.nz and have a look at the webcam there, or you can send a text through using your cell phone, 9292. That'll be ZBZB, probably on your phone pad, and it'll cost you a few cents, and those will pop up on the screen in front of me. So, my guest, Andrew Thorburn, with me till 9 o'clock tonight on Newstalk ZB.
Phone 0800 80 10 80 to join Real Life with John Cowan, or email reallife@newstalkzb.co.nz.
How was your trip to Sydney, John?
Well, I was having dinner with someone very important, and I spilt red wine on his white shirt.
Oh, no. How did Andrew deal with that mess?
Easy. The Fisher & Paykel 8kg Fabric Smart.
That's the Fisher & Paykel auto washer with a special stain cycle.
Yep.
So, you had it with you in the restaurant?
Yep. I always take it as carry-on luggage wherever I go.
Lucky. This week we've got this great machine at just $1,295.
Magnus Benrose, 3 stain-fighting stores, Auckland-wide.
This is a true story.
The problem? Breaking into the export market. The dream? Signing a deal with China. The reality? It's not that easy. Business mentors can help. Business mentors are people who have succeeded in business themselves, now donating their time to help your business in every area of expertise, including exporting. For just a one-off registration fee, you get the support of a business mentor for up to 2 years. Visit businessmentor.org.nz for more.
You can depend on Davy Water Products.
Davy's Microlene water filters give you and your family clean, healthy and great-tasting drinking water. Water that tastes so good, you'll find the kids saying no to soft drinks and yes to delicious filtered water. Davy's Microlene water filters last for 3 whole years, after which they should be replaced. To find out more, call 0800 654 333. That's 0800
654 333. DavyNZ.co.nz.
Phone 0800 80 10 80 to join the show. It's Real Life with John Cowan on Newstalk ZB.
But you wanna be there, just be there, be there. There's no room to be,
be. Well, welcome back to Real Life. My guest tonight, Andrew Thorburn, CEO of the BNZ, who's... pick some strange songs tonight. Michael Jackson, Beat It. Is this reminiscent of your youth, Andrew?
Well, I think Michael Jackson, of course, was a great performer. Mm. And that Beat It was on the Thriller album, I think, in the early mid-80s. And when I first came to New Zealand in 1983, 84, 85, those were my first few years in New Zealand, this song was famous, playing on the radio. In fact, probably Kevin Black was on ZB at the time, and I remember listening to it a lot. I was playing at the time, and my wife and I got married in 1986. I had a Datsun 120Y.
Yes.
So we used to put, you know, when we used to go out, we used to put the little cassette tape and put on Thriller.
Right.
And Billie Jean. So it's got a lot of, you know, really important
memories. So it's a time and place thing.
It's a time and place thing for sure.
And as regards beating it, you beat it too. You're a drummer.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully, you're not going to tell me to beat it.
No.
Yet.
Not
but,
yet.
Yeah, I grew up in sort of a musical family, but I remember wanting to play the drums, but I think my parents said, no way, and I ended up playing the piano and the clarinet, which were poor substitutes as far as I was concerned. But about 10 years ago, I thought I'd give drumming a go, and I'm glad I did. So I now play occasionally.
Yes.
I've got a kit in my garage, which is very pleasing to everybody, I think, that it's separate from the house. But I go out there and play, and I love it.
All right. Okay. Now, we've got a couple of calls, so 0800 80 10 80 if you'd like to speak to my guest tonight, Andrew Thorburn, CEO of the BNZ, and we'll take, Lyle? Hello, Lyle.
Hello, I'm John, and Andrew, are you there, Andrew?
Yes, I'm here, Lyle.
When I went to school, we had the Thrift Club, and we used to bring money to school, but all that money that went into, I think we was supposed to have a savings bank, it went in, but these days, with my grandchildren at school, anybody that they take to school to save, they seem to have to pay some interest or something, but that wasn't done when I went to school.
Okay, so you're probably wondering why children are charged bank fees if you're trying to encourage savers.
Well, I don't think most young children would be charged bank fees nor tax, so, but we need to encourage young kids to actually save and see the benefit of sacrificing something today to have in the future. And I think that's the key issue for young kids. We're in a society where they want it now.
Yep.
and they're not prepared to wait. And so I think the discipline of saving up little by little each week, if you have a part-time job or you get money from your grandparents into the account, you can see it on the internet, so you can see your balance go up. And a lot of the banks these days have little calculators to calculate how much it'll be at the end of the year to give them some incentive.
But then they go to university and there are the banks lining up to give them credit cards.
Yeah, well, that's... but, you know, you've got to also... when they get to university, they've got some other expenses.
Yeah.
And hopefully they're thinking about their career, skills that they're going to learn, so that you're starting to think of them as a young adult who's moving into an important part of their life and getting a job. And if they get a credit card from you today, hopefully with a disciplined limit, and they've got a transaction account, a savings account, that they will be with you as they get their first job, then they get their home.
Okay. Now, do you think young people are financially savvy in New Zealand?
Well, if you say, I think they're aware of what they want their money to do for them. But if you think of savvy as being disciplined and prudent and more aware of the importance of saving, I think no. But I don't think that's... there's a lot of people where financial literacy is quite low.
Yeah, I don't remember anyone sitting down and explaining to me about stocks and shares or investment or anything, ever.
Yeah.
And I just wonder whether we could be educating our young people a bit more. Oh, but thank you very much for that call, Lyle. We'll take another call. Hello, Alan.
Oh, hello. Hello, Andrew.
Hi, Alan.
Hi. Listen, you were just saying about when you sit down for a meal in America, the first subject is politics, where it's number four or five in New Zealand. From a banking perspective, what is your view on the proposed asset sales that the government here are proposing to put forward now?
Well, my view, Alan, this is a personal view. It's not, if you like, an official bank view. But my view is that I support the government pushing to go back into surplus as quickly as they can, because we are a borrower overseas and we need to get our government accounts, which have traditionally been in good shape, back into surplus as quickly as possible. And they're doing a number of things to achieve that, including asset sales. They're putting some of that into an investment fund, which I think has got some potential. It's obviously going to go to social purposes for a start, but I think it could be broader than that. But also I think asset sales means that these companies will be listed on the stock exchange, which will mean that New Zealanders will be able to invest in some good companies that are wanting to grow. And at the moment, I think New Zealand suffers from a lack of alternative investments too, apart from saving in the bank. And what companies need is access to shareholders' capital to help them grow their business and invest. So I think the other key reason that it's positive, Alan, is that it will mean that over the next few years we'll have more significant companies on the stock exchange that New Zealanders are able to invest in. And that's a positive thing. I think that will encourage savings and investment for the future.
Could I ask you one more question?
Yeah, sure.
Now, you said that's your personal view. From a, you know, just put your banker's hat on, do you not think that it may be just a short-term fix to gain some cash or some assets? You know, from a banker's point of view, how would you view what they're doing?
Well, my view is that what the government's doing, as if I was to look at it as a banker, is they're starting to get their financial accounts into a more balance, right? So they can't keep borrowing money in order to sort of provide services today. They need to get their accounts like...
But what about the argument that they're actually flogging off something that would earn them money in the long term?
Well, it's true. They won't be getting dividends that they would get.
And isn't that the strategy that you're saying that people should do, to actually invest in things that are going to pay dividends?
But obviously what the government's going to do is either invest that in some other things that they believe politically they want to support more, or they're going to pay back debt. And on that debt, they're being charged interest by either the bank or the provider. So they'll be able to pay that back.
Alan, thank you very much for your questions. Now, that slight Aussie twang in the back of your throat there betrays your origins. Where did you grow up?
I'm not sure I'll ever throw it off, but I grew up in Melbourne.
Yeah.
I came here when I was 17 on a short-term holiday, and then I stayed. But I did have a New Zealand heritage because my mother's a New Zealander.
Right.
And then when I came here, I stayed because I loved the country. I married a New Zealander,
mm-hmm.
and two of our three children were born here,
mm-hmm.
And I lived here for 14 years on that stint, and all of sort of those big things in your life that shape you happened here for me, you know. I went to university, I got my first job, I got my first home,
mm-hmm.
I got my first and only marriage. So all yes. those big things happened for me here in New Zealand, so it's been a special place for me. But I did go back to Australia with my family
yeah.
for about 13 years, between about 1996 and 2008.
So on the scorecard of your years spent, whose wedding? Have you spent more years this side or that side of the Tasman?
Well, I've certainly spent most of my adult life in New Zealand,
yeah.
but I've spent 18 years.
Mm.
But I'm 47, so the balance is still in favour of Australia. But, you know, if I keep going, John, hopefully it'll balance up.
Now, your start in life was a little bit odd in that you were adopted.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so from birth?
Yeah, I was adopted as a child
yeah.
In 1965, and so I was obviously done very different then.
Yeah.
And my adopted parents have been my parents all my life. They're in their late 70s now. They live in Tauranga.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been, you know, really very committed parents, and you know, I honour them. And I grew up in a very standard but safe suburb in Melbourne when I was growing up.
When did you find out you were adopted?
I found out when I was about 9 or 10.
Did that jar you?
Well, I didn't. No, I don't think so. But I don't think I really understood it, or it wasn't relevant to me because you know, I was in a good home, safe home, and as I grew up, I became a little wayward, and maybe that had something to do with it. But it wasn't until, you know, in my 20s and when I had children of my own, I started to think about the significance of being adopted and who my birth parents were.
Right. And you managed to track your birth parents down?
I did. And it's a very... I found them when I was 28,
mm-hmm.
right? So my sort of life had been formed by that point. And it's a very challenging thing to do, to actually go through the process, to commit to go through that process, to speak with them for the first time. I remember the first time I ever spoke with my birth mother, and it was very, I was anxious about it. You know, you anticipate, you don't know who she is. And I remember the first time I met her, it was Melbourne Airport, and it was about 1993. And I remember we had to describe each other to each other because we'd never met. So it was a little bizarre, walking out of Melbourne Airport that day looking for my birth mother, meeting her for the first time, and I was 28, and she had had me when she was 19.
Did it go well?
Well, it was very intense and very uncertain, and you're searching for to find out lots of information, but then where your place is, if at all, together. And with my birth mother, I found my birth father as well. With my birth mother, it started well, but then it became difficult because she'd only ever had one child, me. She never had was married, and she was only 48 when I met her, right? So quite young. And I think she wanted to claim a place that I couldn't really give her as a mother.
Because you had a mum and dad.
I did. I had a mum and dad who'd sort of been there up until, you know, until I was 28, and all those critical phases in life had been there. But so, unfortunately, we had to, with my birth mother, had to sort of basically separate for some years. And very sadly, she died this year at age only 66. She had cancer. I was able to talk to her in the days leading up to her passing to try to, I suppose, reach out to each other. But, you know, that was a very, you know, a difficult conversation as well. So in answer to the question, did it go well? Yes and no.
Yes and no.
But I would do it again. Did because you? It was such a burning question for me. Where did I come from? Who were my birth parents? What sort of people are they? Where are they in the world today? And how did they shape who I am?
Do you find that you understand yourself a bit better having met them?
Yeah, I do. Because when I met my birth parents, I met my birth father as well. And he lived in New York for 20 years. He was in the theatre. He was a director. He was eccentric, you know, and he was right out there in a personality sense. So when you take my birth mother and my birth father, and my birth mother was in theatre as well, and you compare them to my adopted parents, they're like chalk and cheese. You could not get two more different groups of people.
Yeah.
So it's that nurture and nature. And so I did find out a lot about myself, sort of the sort of my DNA and some of the energy and drive intensity that I've got, for me, I didn't know where that came from before, but when I found them, it gave me context.
Genes.
Yes.
I'm talking with Andrew Thorburn, the CEO of the BNZ Bank, and you're welcome to join the conversation, 0800 80 10 80, and we'll be back with Andrew in just a minute. This is News Talk ZB.
The four-wheel drive Toyota Highlander starts at just under 60K. And at North Shore Toyota, they won't sell you one. Here's why. Right now at North Shore Toyota, at just $59,990, you'll get upgraded to the Highlander Limited. That's the big boy, the top of the line, including full leather for about the price of a regular one. Upgrade to Highlander Limited for just $59,990. Only at North Shore Toyota, 3 minutes north of the bridge.
Once, day trippers would spill off the ferry onto the wharf at St Heliers Bay. Now it's an easy ride from the city along scenic Tamaki Drive. Welcome to St Heliers Village. The shopping is unique. Specialty stores and boutiques, many owner-operated. Clothing, jewellery, shoes, bags, gifts and more. Pop into the pharmacy or pick up some groceries. There's a playground on the beachfront for the kids. St Heliers Village, by the sea.
Community notices with stressless recliners from Danske Mobil. Comfort is simply another name for stressless.
Chip and His Dog is a mini opera suitable for children and the young at heart. It's presented by the Opera Factory with four performances from the 21st to the 23rd of June. Chip and His Dog will be on stage at the Factory Theatre, 7 Eden Street, Newmarket. And you can get tickets at iticket.co.nz. They're $20 for adults and $10 for kids and students.
Caring for our communities. Danske Mobil. And News Talk ZB.
Real life, your slice of life.
With John Cowan.
On News Talk ZB.
Welcome back to Real Life. This is a song picked by Andrew Thorburn, Mighty to Save, by Hillsong. That's a Christian song. And so you have a spiritual component in your life.
Yes, I do, John. Well, I'm most certainly a Christian. I grew up in, I would say, a religious home where there was discussion about God, the King James Version of the Bible, and I think what I would describe now as lots of rituals that were based on performing your way to be approved by God. And it was a very difficult group in the end that I found, and both my wife and I left a bit over 10 years ago, which was a difficult thing to do in and of itself.
So it's quite a small group that people may not have heard of very very much, isn't it? In fact, it's almost an invisible group in New Zealand and Australia. The doesn't even have a name, does it?
It doesn't have a name, and it's been called, maybe for that reason, the secret sect, or the 2x2 homeless ministry of the 2x2s, because they believe in sending out their preachers 2x2. So yes, it's quite small in New Zealand. It probably started here in the early 1900s. But they believe fervently that theirs is the one right way.
Okay, so you grew up in this quite a, I suppose, let's say an odd spiritual context, and that it was very isolated, probably from other Christians, and you believing that you were the only ones, and you were in it until, you say, only about 10 years ago.
Yes, well, it wasn't sort of odd when you're growing up, because when you're...
Yeah, what was it like growing up?
Well, when you're a kid growing up, and that's what you come to understand. And actually, it wasn't all negative, because there was lots of a sense of community. We had, you know, my parents had lots of wonderful friends, and some of those people are alive today, and they're wonderful friends of ours. But there was lots of rituals and attendance at certain meetings, and to me, there just wasn't what I now believe is grace, which is the, you know, one of the most important pillars of being a Christian is the grace of God, that they believe that you earned your way if you were good enough, that you would eventually, when you die, probably maybe find out whether you made it to heaven and you're sort of, if you like, have a relationship with God. Whereas for me, that I began to ask lots of questions, as did my wife, and we weren't satisfied with them and we left, which is a difficult thing to do, to leave a close group.
Very, very difficult. Yeah, if it was that close,
it's difficult to leave that group, and certainly we subsequently became very strong Christians, but now that topic of our faith, which is one of the most important influences in my life, cannot be broached with my parents or other people who are in that group.
So they haven't shunned you, they just don't want to talk about that aspect of your life.
Yeah, they certainly haven't shunned us. No. We have a lot to do with them, but the conversation is limited to practical stuff, right? Not stuff of the heart or of your faith, which is very sad, really. Yeah. But yes, we left, and we obviously still had, both of us, a sense of wanting to know God, but we had to go through a process of unlearning lots of stuff and learning new things. And we went to a course called Christianity Explored, which basically broke the Bible and the gospel down so that we could understand it. And through that, that's how I came to faith.
Okay. And so you're very active in your own church now?
Yes. Well, I think often Christians, you know, being active in church and being a genuinely sort of reformed and saved by grace Christian are two different things, right? But we do go to a church called Auckland Bible Church in Green Lane, where there's good Bible teaching and a good band, which helps, which is positive. But the teaching is very important, and people are, you know, very, very friendly. So we've been going there since we returned to New Zealand in late 08, early 09.
Okay. In your business life?
Yes.
Do you take Jesus to work?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
In what sense?
Well, in the sense that I feel, as a Christian, that having a relationship with God is something that is ever present, right? And but I, you know, I also need to respect that some of the things that I believe and my role as the CEO of the bank, they're quite separate things. So I need to separate my life as a Christian, my ethics, my values, and not force them in any way on any other people. But I think I bring... It's changed me in the sense that I certainly feel more content and more calm, and I have more perspective, even when things are difficult, because of the context of having a relationship with God and the context of eternity. But the thing that's really changed for me is I've always been, if you like, a people person. I've loved people, but it's gone to a whole new level for me in the sense that I believe that God created people and he wants a relationship with them. So everybody that I'm dealing with is, if you like, one of God's creation that he loves. So that brings a deepness of respect, of wanting to be fair, of wanting to ensure that people are heard. And so for me as a leader, it's brought a depth to my leadership around people that I just didn't have 10 years ago.
My guest tonight, Andrew Thorburn, CEO of the BNZ Bank, and you're welcome to speak to him on 0800 80 10 80. We've actually got the board full of callers waiting to speak to him, but we'll come to those calls after this break, and then there'll be some lines freed up to be able to call through. 0800 80 10 80 or text through to 9292.
No matter where you are, there's a local laser lad on hand in his trusty laser car. We reckon he's the best in the land. Just call 0800-8-LASER.
You could win the trip of a lifetime to watch the New Zealand Olympic team in London. Apply for ANZ Life Insurance before June 27 and you'll be in to win. If you already have life insurance with ANZ, you're automatically in the draw. So race into any ANZ branch today. ANZ, official insurance partner of the New Zealand Olympic team. Terms, conditions and exclusions apply to ANZ Lifestyle Insurance, which is underwritten by OnePath Insurance Services New Zealand Limited. For more details and competition terms and conditions, go to any branch of ANZ or National Bank.
At Kensington Park, the good life is part of the plan. Introducing the Nookamia Apartments. Sitting proudly alongside Oriwa's Nookamia Stream, just metres from Eve's Bush Reserve. Newly released, these 2 and 3 bedroom apartments feature generous balconies, ideal for sipping cocktails on long summer nights. Priced from $629,000, inquire today at the display suite, One Parkside Drive, Kensington Park, Oriwa, or go online to kensingtonpark.co.nz. Kensington Park, Oriwa, where neighbours become friends.
The Beach Boys. The founding members of The Beach Boys, one of the world's most legendary bands, have reunited for their new album, That's Why God Made the Radio. This is the band's 29th studio album and the first in decades to feature all the band's surviving original members. Featuring the title track and first single, That's Why God Made the Radio. Out now, CD or digital album.
Allied Pickfords. Relax, we carry the load. Moving to Australia or further afield? Moving locally or within New Zealand? Phone 0800 Allied. Need storage or moving your office? Phone 0800 Allied. Allied Pickfords, for all your home and commercial moving needs.
Hi, need a plasma, LCD or projector bracket? Then Shawmount have a solution for you. With a great range of brackets at fantastic prices, Shawmount is the place to go. Shawmount.co.nz. Shawmount.co.nz. You can be sure if it's Shawmount.
Real life, your slice of life.
With John Cowan.
On News Talk ZB.
The hoodie wins hands down.
If you want to see the CEO of the BNZ Bank leaping around the studio, imagine they're catching imaginary balls and things in the air, then you should go to our webcam on the newstalkzb.co.nz website. I take it from that that you are an Aussie Rules fan.
Yeah, I grew up following Aussie Rules, John, because I was born in Melbourne, and of course in those days that was the main sport and probably still
is. Probably still is.
Yeah. So I remember going to watch Essendon play when I was about 9 or 10, mm-hmm. at a place called Windy Hill, which is one of the suburbs of Auckland. No, they don't play there anymore. But, yeah, so I followed AFL, and I still go back there, particularly with my son, who's 16,
yep.
and we watch a couple of games of footy a year, and we love it.
But I did
love watching the All Blacks just beat the Irish last night, too.
So. Yeah, it was tighter than most people expected. And did you ever play Aussie Rules? You must be running that huge field.
Yeah.
And they run and run and run.
In those small shorts.
That's right. Yeah, the small shorts.
That's to restrict you. yes, I did. I played a lot of sport yep. when I was in my teenage years, and I played Aussie Rules. But, look, by the time I got to 16, some of these guys are so big and strong, I ended up in the bottom of the pack way too often.
Yes.
So I gave up.
Right. Hey, let's take some calls. You'd like to pop your headphones on. We'll go to Jeremy. Hello, Jeremy. Thanks for waiting.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks, Andrew, for taking our call tonight. I'm pretty excited. I've got a couple of very brief questions. Firstly, what's your favourite part of your job? And secondly, what do you do to unwind?
Good questions. Thanks, Jeremy.
So, favourite part of my job, Jeremy, is without doubt working with people and seeing people grow and take on challenges, sometimes that they don't think they are capable of nailing.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they don't nail it, but then you get a chance to coach and to see how they can still grow and succeed at the next one. So definitely it's around having fun with people, working with people of all sorts of different shapes and sizes and seeing them grow and succeed.
That's cool. And part two of Jeremy's question was, what do you do to unwind?
Ooh,
drugs?
and I'm trying to give them up.
Oh, okay.
No, I would say spend time with my my family, travel down to the Coromandel where we have a beach house,
yep.
and if I can, get out and play the drums.
Drums, okay.
Yes, and reading. I love reading, but yep. Can't fit it all in.
No. And how old are your kids?
Our kids are 21,
mm-hmm.
20 and 16.
All right.
Yeah.
Good stage, eh?
Yeah, great stage.
Yeah.
I spoke to our eldest daughter this morning. She's in the Contiki tour, and I'm hoping not to know the details, but she was in Austria, and she's had a wonderful time over the last 3.5 weeks.
That's right. It's a good stage when they get to that stage. So thanks very much for that call, Jeremy. It was good. Hello, James.
Oh, good evening, gentlemen. How are you tonight?
Hi, James.
Fantastic. Yeah, thank you very much for speaking to us tonight, Andrew. I enjoyed listening to your background. My question for you, does BNZ lower their interest rates compared to other banks?
So if I can just understand your question, We obviously have a range of deposit rates and lending rates across the board, and our goal is to make sure that they're really competitive. And at any one time, you know, one particular rate may be above or below other banks. But what we try to do is make sure, if we're not competitive, obviously we start to lose deposits or we don't get loans that we should. So we have to make sure that we're pretty competitive in our interest rates and all other aspects of our service as well. Is that what you mean?
Yes, and I thank you very much for your answer, because I went to BNZ last week with a competitor's bank offer, and we've got home loans with BNZ, and your customer service officer managed to discount your current rate by 0.15% owing to our continued relationship with BNZ. And my wife and I were absolutely thrilled to be with BNZ and get that interest rate.
Well, that's great, James. Thank you for your story, and thank you for banking with us.
But one last hopeful answer. At the moment, I've noticed that in BNZ, where I'm living, there has been a decline in what we'd say the front office staff. I've noticed that quite a few of them, it doesn't look like they're enjoying their day or enjoying their job. They don't tend to greet you, or I'm thinking of one particular branch in particular. But
you're getting a strong response here from the CEO. He's sort he's twitching and leaping up, and he probably want to talk to you off air to find out which branch
that is. Well, I'd certainly like to know if you could send through the details, James, but we've got 180 stores through the country and about another 30 business centres, and about 5,000 staff in the bank. So we're not going to get it right all the time, but I think we've got a good record. Our engagement scores of our staff are positive, and our in-store service is actually pretty much number one consistently. So I think by and large, most of the time we get it right, but it would be good to get feedback if you've got specifics about that.
What email address can he send his details through?
So he can send it to andrew_thorburn at bnz.co.nz.
andrew_thorburn@bnz.co.nz. And is that the address they should try to get that 1.15% off their
mortgage? Yeah, I'll probably be inundated. Staff will be horrified.
You're a brave man. We'll take another break. Be back in just a minute.
My neighbour came over the other day and said, "That's a flash new car, Barry. French, Italian, German?" "No," I said, "it's from a place much closer to home, Monocle Hyundai." Now, there you'll find the entire Hyundai range on display. You'll also find New Zealand's biggest small car range. That's the Accent, Elantra, i20, i30, and the stunning new Veloster. See Monocle Hyundai, the 100% Hyundai dealership, and tell them Barry sent you.
It's Kerry's Book Choices with Paper Plus. Hi, I'm Kerry. This week, This Is How It Ends by Kathleen McMahon. You will need some tissues for this debut novel. Addie lives in an Irish village looking after a cantankerous father. Bruno's been made redundant from his job in the great financial crisis and decides to go to Ireland to trace his ancestors. But just when two people believe they've finally found happiness, life throws a nasty curveball. Beautiful, heartbreakingly sad, highly recommended. It's This Is How It Ends by Kathleen McMahon. I'm Kerry for Paper Plus.
The 7am Report.
Good morning, I'm Bernadine Oliver-Kirby with the 7am Report.
It's me.
As the 7am Report continues, ZB, time saver traffic and travel with sports. Matt Brown, morning, Matt.
Good morning, Wendy. The 7am Report. So big, it wouldn't fit in your mailbox. Then, Mike Hosking and ZB's biggest interview of the day.
Are you the big
news, sport, traffic, weather, interviews. The 7am Report. 12 and a half minutes of power. Live from the News Talk ZB News Centre. Weekdays from 7 on News Talk ZB.
Real life. Your slice of life.
With John Cowan.
On News Talk ZB.
Hot potato. Yeah, I told you that Andrew picked some odd songs, and that's the Wiggles.
That's the Wiggles, John, because whilst we've lived here for a while, our kids spent a lot of their time growing up in Australia.
Yes.
We lived in Sydney, so we used to travel between Sydney, up the Pacific Highway to the Gold Coast or the Sunshine Coast where my grandmother lived.
Yep.
And so we've done that trip quite a few times again with Wiggles tapes.
Right.
And this is a good Wiggles song. You know, you can really rock to those up the Pacific Highway.
We'll take a couple, we've got a couple more calls. Hello, Lance.
Yeah, hi. Hi Andrew.
Hi there.
Thanks for sharing some of your personal story.
Thank you.
That was great to listen to that while I was waiting, because I had similar experiences to yourself. and that I was brought up in the Exclusive Brethren.
Right.
And got thrown out. And,
right.
But I'm still very committed to my Christian faith.
Good.
And well, I take Jesus to work every day with me.
Good.
Well, so that was fantastic for you to share that.
You're right. Thank you
so
very
much.
We have
that in common. My question, my question to you is, where is all the money coming from to bail out these countries that get themselves into such terrible debt, and these banks, they just lose millions, and all of a sudden, zillions of dollars seem to appear out of somewhere, and people get rescued. Where does the money come from?
So, great question, Lance, because you wonder sometimes, don't you? But usually it's coming from governments, central governments or sovereigns, who obviously control the money supply, can print money if they need to, and have the highest credit rating that's possible. Mm-hmm. But of course, what's happening is they're going into more and more debt as part of this process. So that's mainly where it's coming from. And of course, then it's putting pressure on social services and on taxes. So there's no such thing as a free lunch, is there? So that's where it's mainly coming from.
Okay. Thank you very much for that. And I'm sorry we won't have time to do any more callers because the hour is quickly running out. But just finally, when I've watched interviews of you, I've understood what you're saying, which is unusual for a leader. Do you, as a leader, do you try and get your communication right?
Well, I think being a leader is, you know, about having courage and being humble and listening, and but it's also about being able to communicate.
Mm.
But communication's a two-way thing. You need to listen, and you need to be able to communicate back. So, yeah, I think communication is a very important part of being a leader, but it's not the most important thing, because I think being authentic and courageous and decisive is probably more important than all.
Andrew, it's been an absolute pleasure talking with you tonight, and
thank you,
I wish you all the best.
Thank you very much.
Look forward to being back again next week on Real Life.